Welcome, Mike Moore, to the podcast. How you doing, Mike?
Doing great, thank you.
I appreciate you doing this. This is a special series of podcasts we're doing called Radio Influencers. And I was excited to talk to you because the whole idea is to talk to folks who are trying to move the industry forward. And your name was one of the first on my list.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You reached out to me about a month ago. I wrote a blog about streaming hit or radio hit. And it kind of tripped your trigger. And we had a really interesting conversation about country music, especially, that I kind of wanted to recreate here because you made a lot of really good points. Do you kind of remember that article?
Yeah, I mean, I think your point was is in country obviously has been a little slow to sort of follow streaming or pay attention to streaming. I think now it's become sort of more acceptable and more widespread that programmers are using that as part of a decision-making process when they're evaluating songs. They're not only relying on just, if they have it, local research or whatever, but they're also paying attention to what is being consumed in their marketplaces or nationwide.
And I want to come back to that because you made a couple good points there. But first, can you kind of give them your radio origin story, like how you got into this crazy business we're
oh,
in?
Man, it's been a long time, Andy. I actually got into radio. I was going to University of Minnesota, growing up there, and listening to one of my favorite radio shows. It was the Heinz and Berglund show on what was then WLOL 99.5 is a top 40 station.
Yeah.
And it was a very cold Minnesota morning, and I was sitting in my bedroom in my dad's basement, basically, and I did not really want to get up and get in the car and drive to campus. And I was listening to the radio, and Heinz and Berglund were then talking about then-President Ronald Reagan. And I had always, as a child, kind of played with voice impersonations.
Yeah.
And I knew Ronald Reagan was a voice I could do. And so I called the radio station as Ronald Reagan. And their producer put me on hold, and the next thing I knew, I was on the radio and doing a little bit back and forth with the guys. And, you know, they kind of threw me some softballs, so it was pretty easy to know where the joke needed to land or what I needed to say. And we finished our little thing on the air, and John Hines, one of the hosts, said, "Hey, can you, Mr. President, could you hold for a moment?" And they went into commercials, and he came on the phone and goes, who are you?" And I told him what I was doing. He goes, "Do you do any other voices?" And I said, "Yeah, I do this and that, blah, blah, blah." And he said, "What are you doing today?" I said, "Well, I go to the University of Minnesota. I'm going to class." And he goes, "Why don't you skip that and come to lunch with me?" And I did. And lo and behold, you know, I started doing regular stuff for their show and other stations around the country. In fact, at one point, I think I was the voice of Ronald Reagan on like 20 radio stations. And I used to sit on the edge of my bed and get paid to do that. And I thought, this radio thing is great. I mean, I was studying journalism in school.
Okay, so it's not too far off.
Stretch,
you know,
yeah. I was kind of on that path anyway, but it was like, wow, this is fantastic. So that's what got me into it. And then I was on the air and eventually realized that I was probably a better coach than I was a player and moved into programming and you know, the rest is history. So but that's how I started in radio.
You were bit by the bug, as I always like to say, and then it's too late.
Sure.
So now you're at Cumulus in Atlanta?
Yeah. Atlanta, yep. Been here for about 4 years and have been in country radio programming, my gosh, a long time. I mean, you know, originally in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then Omaha, Omaha, Lincoln, and then Orlando, Florida, and Hartford, Nashville. Spent a long time out in Portland, Oregon, and then arrived here in Atlanta about 4 years ago.
I've got family in Oregon, and then I've got a client in Nebraska that I work with, Flood Communications. So I know some of those areas a little bit. But how has your process changed for what you add, move, and rest in recent years, incorporating some of that streaming info?
Well, Yeah, I absolutely incorporate it now and have for the last, I would say, probably coming up on 3 years, where, you know, we've gone so far as to sort of build a spreadsheet. And you know, we plug into that our local research. We plug into that a score that sort of is subjective, right? But it's a score that we take into account that kind of looks at our opinion, you know, of the artist, of the song. Does it fit? You know, does it sound like things that have had success in this marketplace in the past? Mm-hmm. You know, does this artist move the needle from a standpoint of, does the audience care? You know, do they have a fan base that would want to hear this? You know, can they sell out a big arena here? You know, all of that kind of goes into that local sort of opinion factor. Mm-hmm. And then we take into account national and local streams, and also like to kind of look at from a local standpoint, does it, from a streaming standpoint, over index in the Atlanta market versus nationally, you know, and if so, why is that? Why might that be, you know? And then, like I said, some of it comes down to opinion and just sort of good old fashioned gut, which sadly I think radio has largely gotten away from, but isn't that part of the art in what we do, right, versus the
Well, science? And I think that's the right combination. Like, I get pushback from some programmers when I talk about looking at some of the streaming data because they feel like I'm taking the gut out of it, and I'm absolutely not, because I 100% agree with you that you're still using that does this fit approach to decide what bucket to put in. I mean, does this belong in country? Or not, and does this fit on country radio? You can't tell that from looking at the numbers. That's sure. Where the gut comes in. But it's funny that you mentioned spreadsheet, because I'm looking at mine right now. That's exactly how I do it as well. Obviously for local markets, I have additional information that I look at for them. But I've sounds like we have a fairly similar process. Did you get any pushback when you made that change and started looking at it that way from your staff or anybody?
No, thankfully, you know, I have been very blessed for the most part of my career to be allowed some autonomy. And particularly here at Cumulus, I will say they've given me a large amount of autonomy. And that really speaks to Brian Phillips, who's our head of programming and the kind of leader he is and the relationship that we have. So no, not really. I mean, it made sense to me. And it's interesting that you mentioned the buckets that things go in, or does it fit? There's a song now, and I can't think of what it is or who the female artist is, but Jelly Roll's on it. Mm-hmm. And the label desperately wants to try to work this at country because they know Jelly Roll has exploded in our format and everything else. But they've classified it as a country song. But if you listen to the track, it doesn't sound at all like anything that would appeal to a core country listener.
Is that Jesse Murph, Wild Ones?
That's exactly the song. That's exactly the song. And while I don't think it's a bad song, I don't think it fits the expectation of what listeners to this radio station, to country, typical country, would expect when they turn on the air. Yes, Jelly Roll's on it. They've accepted him largely, but that doesn't mean he's going to accept, or they're going to accept everything he does, every, you know, genre that he decides to dabble in, and that's fine, you know. But I just don't know that the audience is ready for that particular track at this point. Now, who knows? Maybe they will be. I think one of the things you and I talked about is that a younger generation doesn't view things in the same boxes.
Correct.
That those of us do that are older. You know what I mean? If I look at my daughter, who's 19's playlist, I mean, it goes from, you know, rap music to country music to rock music to Noah Kahan. And I don't know what you'd call Noah Kahan, but he's cool.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, Simon and Garfunkel to me. In fact, it sounds a lot like Paul Simon to me as far as vocal quality. But I don't know what you'd call the music he does, you know. It could be folk. It's certainly getting some play at pop. I mean, you know, whatever. So I think, you know, as a program director, I mean, one of the things that, again, they hire you to do is to have some instincts and to get to know your audience and try to figure out what it is they'll respond to.
Well, and that I agree with you on that Jesse Murph Jelly Roll tune. I'm playing that on Hot AC and Top 40, but I'm not playing it on country. And that brings up a good point. I think that's the same. Like, one mistake I feel like stations make is getting in that automatic ad range where Jelly Roll's had, like you mentioned, some of his other stuff fit and did really well for you guys. But that doesn't mean everything he puts out you're gonna jump on. Nobody gets an automatic ad.
You know, the my favorite sort of rebuttal to a record label person wanting me to play something that I didn't feel like fit or wasn't good for my radio station or didn't fit an audience expectation was, and I've used it many times. Madison Moore is my daughter, and I said, you know, I said, I love my daughter, Madison. I can't tell you how much I love Madison, but I don't love everything she does.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love Jelly Roll, but I don't love everything he does. And the guy said, okay, you know, throw his hands up. There's not much you can do about that. So.
Well, and that also leads into the, like, one of the things I see some country stations making the mistake of is when you don't watch this data as well, for the record, the ones we look at the most are Spotify and YouTube, and that's sure. What we track weekly. But when you don't look at this data, you tend to not notice some when the artist's career is fading a little bit, which is sad, but it happens to everybody. And so, sure. You know, those last couple songs they put out that's not really connecting with the audience, but because we've had so many hits from them, we feel like, well, this one's got to be, you know. But if you're not paying attention to the data, sometimes you miss that.
Yeah. And also, again, you know, I think if people have experience and they're allowed some autonomy and they have some good instincts, you kind of know what are the ones that are really, you know, going to connect. And this was just kind of a subpar effort or just a, you know, sort of a middling effort from this particular artist. I mean, you know, there are people that have had, you know, 20 number ones. Well, how many of those 20 number ones are being played 2 or 3, 4 years later because right. They've tested through to gold and that they're the ones that the audience stands up and cheers for at the show, you know?
Yeah, and that's a testament to not always tell folks, it doesn't live in your database in perpetuity. Just because you added it and it did really well for you doesn't mean it's going to stay and automatically roll down the categories. You brought up something earlier about country being a little bit behind, and I agree with that, but it's starting to catch up. I feel like music is released differently now than it used to be, and I personally feel like, and I don't know if you agree, that we need to adjust our rules and everything to kind of match up with that. So I've changed. I don't know if you've changed anything with artist separation of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. We, you know, without like revealing too much. I mean, yes, absolutely. I think that look. This has been an amazing business for me to be in, and I think it's still an amazing business to be in. But many of the rules with regard to rotations, you know, how we schedule music, how we decide what we're going to play, what fits, what doesn't fit, I think all of those things are being challenged today because of how the world has changed. I mean, let's think about this for a minute, you know. Technology is evolving at lightning speed. You can't possibly keep up with it. Release schedules of music have just lightning speed. You couldn't possibly digest it all. And I think all of that changed even to a greater degree COVID and post-COVID, you know, yes. How people entertain themselves, what they value in life, you know, where they get their entertainment, all of those things. And so I think it'd be foolish for radio to sit back and say, well, these rules that we've followed for the last 40 years, 50 years, those still apply. Even the entire world around us has changed. This is still the gospel. It's like, really? That seems very arrogant to me. And I think that we would do ourselves a service by looking at what we do and does it still apply and does it still make sense in today's world and how things have changed and how people's habits have changed.
Well, and the other thing I've kind of come around to is, like it or not, every genre, and country is no different, is led by the superstars in that genre. And they kind of, to me, different rules apply to those people, because you can't, I think sometimes we get in the mistake of putting people on the same level, even though in my mind, there are a couple country superstars right now that are leading it, and there's a big distance. Yeah. Who do you kind of see in that conversation?
Well, I mean, they're, you know, look at it, and you talked about release schedules and stuff and how music is released. I mean, Morgan Wallen and Luke Combs really are the two that in this format who have changed that game. You know, you've got some artists that have been established and have been stars in their own right for a much longer period of time that are now releasing things on a more, you know, on a faster pace because of what those guys have done, you know. I think I don't know if those are the two that you're speaking of.
100% the two I was thinking of. Yeah, Morgan Wallen and Luke Combs to me are kind of in a different tier right now. And then even like, I heard Jelly Roll in a podcast talking about this exact same thing, and he gave it up for both of them. He said Morgan Wallen and Luke Combs are the two guys leading the genre, and I'm a distant third, and some others are a distant third and fourth. But the artists get it; they know who's kind of carrying the torch for the format. You know,
right? Well, and that's you know, sort of speaks to what I said earlier about just sort of knowing your market, right? Understanding the audience. You know, I think it's safer to play a new song by somebody who is established and has a giant fan base, particularly if it's new. Like, it wasn't on the album. It just came out yesterday. You know what I mean? But it's Morgan Wallen, for crying out loud. You know there's an appetite for his music. You know that there are people, particularly if it's brand new. You know, it's not something that's on the album that they've all consumed over the last year and a half, right? But it was something that just dropped, that he just dropped. I think, you know, there's some safety in playing something like that because, again, you know there's a rabid fan base that is interested in hearing it.
Yeah, and if we go with the traditional route and we wait months and months and months for that to be released as a single, then we're kind of, it seems like we're ceding that new music discovery device part of radio to others. And I think that's a mistake.
I couldn't agree more, because I think that, you know, I don't know what the overlap is, and nobody can tell you for certain, even the folks at Luminate, whatever, you know, there's a Venn diagram, right? And there's streamers, and then there's radio listeners, and there's an overlap. Nobody can tell you with, they could give you general sort of statistics, but they can't get very granular in that data exactly what demographics. I mean, I think it logically, you know, there's probably less overlapping in the young end of things and, you know, whatever. But I just think that we shouldn't give up that fight. You know, I think we should be striving to be entertaining and on the cutting edge and to be in the new music business.
Yeah, what changes do you see in the future in the music industry, and how do you think radio should adapt to that?
Oh boy, I don't know. I mean, radio certainly is part of that ecosystem. But when you talk about the music business as a whole, I mean, you know, with artists and labels and managers and publishing and all of that, I think it's changing at, like I said, you know, with technology, it's rapid, changing at a breakneck pace. And I don't know how you get your arms around it. I mean, I think, you know, AI is a scary thing. I mean, there've been a lot of talk about that and people replicating artists' voices and creating things.
That's already happened.
It has happened and will continue probably.
But it's only going to get better. It's happened now and we can tell. What happens when we can't tell?
Yeah. So it's a scary thing on a lot of in a lot of areas. Again, I think like radio that hangs on to sort of what I believe some things that are kind of antiquated in their points of view or ways of doing things that are a little antiquated. You know, the record business is guilty of that. You know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, publishers are, artists, manager, you know, whatever. I mean, I just think, so the folks that are really smart and figure out how to navigate the landscape are the ones who ultimately will survive and thrive in that environment. But I think it's a changing environment for all of us, and I think we'd be foolish not to look at it that way.
Yeah, and I think I'm impressed that you guys have your pulse. I mean, if you have a pulse on what's happening now, you're much more likely to be ahead of it as these things change. And the folks that kind of cling to, this is how I've always done it, this is how I'm comfortable doing it, those folks are just going to fall further behind.
Yeah. You know, because no, I agree. We're blessed to be in what I still consider a fun business, and it's fun to learn new things, and it's fun to get different perspectives, and you know, that's why I still love going out and going to shows, because it's mini focus groups for me.
Yeah.
I get to see how that audience interacts with my morning show and the things they talk about and what truly engages them. And you know, while it's not scientific, I still think it's extremely interesting, and it sometimes gives me more questions than I have answers, but I think you need to be in touch with those things.
That's why I always tell programmers, don't just hang out in VIP, because you have to get out there in gin pop. You know, you got to get around the people and see how they're reacting, right, especially when it's one of your artists on the stage. And in your morning show doing an intro, seeing how they're responding to that morning show. That's all important stuff. Speaking of morning show, has your coaching philosophy adjusted over the years? Have you changed your approach to that?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, I think the most critical thing to that to me is that you need to develop a level of trust. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have that, if you don't have a level of trust and respect, that's a difficult thing. And I've been very blessed. I mean, I've worked with some great people over the years, and I have a great show now. I've actually got great talent around the clock, but we're talking specifically about mornings. But, you know, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, and you need to understand them, you know, as humans and what it is that motivates them and what's important to them. And again, I think if you have that trust, then you can offer constructive criticism or feedback that they will believe is helpful, and they'll actually take the time to implement, and may actually work, you know. Yeah. So but if you don't have that, if you don't have some trust and respect, that's very difficult to get to that point.
Yeah, I agree. That's so key. There's with every morning show I coach, there's this point where the light bulb goes off for them, and they realize, oh, this guy, we're all on the same team, you know, we all want the same thing, he's just here to help. And when that happens, right, it's like night and day different, the meetings, you know.
Like I said, I've been pretty fortunate. I've for the most part worked with really great people who, good human beings who, you know, wanted to do the right thing. But I've always been puzzled by, or and mostly just through osmosis, hearing about other people's situations. But when I hear that a morning show or a talent believes that somehow you're trying to sink them or do something that would not be good for them, it's like, well, wait a second. The ratings go up, we're all happy. The ratings go down, we're all unhappy. So why in the world would I ever tell you to do anything that I felt like was, you know, counterproductive? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. You know?
Yeah, I always say we succeed together and we fail together. You know, it doesn't look right, good on me as a coach if you guys don't do well. We're all here to help, but that's interesting. I'm glad you've had that. I mean, obviously I've worked with some great folks over the years, but I've had some challenging, I always say no one is uncoachable, but it's all a matter of, where's their ceiling at and how hard is that coaching process, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I had a mentor of mine, a terrific boss, a guy named Bill Hendrick, who at the end of his career was running Cox, and he was sales manager and then general manager for me years ago, back in the 90s in Orlando. And he said to me, he said, look, your job as a manager or as a coach is to make sure that everyone on your team performs at their particular optimum level, whatever that level is. It's your job to get them there. Now, he said certain people, their optimum, whatever their best level is, may not be good enough to even be on your team. And those are the people that unfortunately you have to weed out. But he goes, as long as everybody on your team is meeting your expectations and performing at their optimum, you're doing your job. And that's, I've kind of lived by.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing it took me a while to learn is, I think I came in, to management with kind of a one size fits all approach. And I quickly learned that, you know, it takes different people and different personality types are motivated by different things. And so, so you have to kind of adjust accordingly because it, like you said, it's all about getting the optimum performance out of that personality or that person on your team. And so if you just have a my way or the highway or one size fits all, this is in my mind, this is what an on-air talent is supposed to sound like and look like and act like, then you're destined to fail.
Right. I agree with that.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. It's been great talking shop with you and talking country music. Are you off to CRS?
I will be there for only though about 24 hours. I'm on a panel, actually with Jelly Roll.
Oh, nice.
On that Wednesday, but I'm on vacation the following week, and so I don't like being out of the office that long, and so I didn't want to be out of the office for a week and a half or something, so I figured I'll go in for the day and then come back and work, and then I'll go on vacation the following
week. Yeah, that's always a good time. I'm not going this year, but I do love that conference. And
it is a great learning, networking event, and it always has been. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Mike Moore.
All right. Thank you.
Radio Influencers is a radio update production. New episodes are released on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern.